let's be real. Lawsuits are no fun, but with Paulson and Nace, at least, they are a little easier. With two DC-born partners, Paulson and Nace will fight for you the way only a Washingtonian could. Paulson and Nace handles medical malpractice, wrongful death, and other complex injury cases involving negligence. So if you have been hurt or lost a loved one because of someone else's mistake or negligence, call Paulson and Nace for a no-obligation consultation. Visit www.paulsonandnace.com or call 202-463-1999.
Today on CityCast DC, we are doing our first ever live taping today, and it's happening at Politics and Prose at Union Market. Our whole team will be there, along with CityCast CEO David Plotz and Anton Bogomazov from Politics and Prose. So come hang out with us and see how we make the show. Speaking of, today is the last day of Native American Heritage Month, but we shouldn't limit conversations about Indigenous culture to November. So I'm here with two Native women to chat about the rich history of DC's Indigenous communities and all the different ways we can celebrate them. It's Wednesday, November 30th, 2022. I'm Bridget Todd, and this is CityCast DC.
My name is Mary Phillips, and I'm from the Pueblo of Laguna tribe in New Mexico, and also from the Omaha, or as the public knows it as Omaha, tribe of Nebraska.
And I'm Dana Hutchbeth. I'm a reporter at the Washington Post, and I'm an enrolled member of the Halawa Saponi tribe of North Carolina.
Thank you so much for being here. I'm so excited to chat. First up, right off the bat, what do y'all think is the most misunderstood thing about the Native American community here in DC?
We get asked a lot of different things, and it always kind of comes down to whether or not we exist, that people are surprised that there are still Native Americans who live, you know, on the reservation, off the reservation, and still are among the community members in society doing what we do, which is, you know, anything anyone else is doing. So I think that kind of is the first shocking thing that people might ask. But then the second question is, do you still live in teepees? So, you know, we're still kind of educating as we converse and educating where we work and so forth.
I'm going to second exactly what Mary said. You could see me. I'm nodding my head furiously. She hit the nail on the head. They're so surprised that Native folks are physicists, doctors, lawyers. We wear pants and shirts and blouses and skirts just like you. We're not in buckskins and teepees. We pay mortgages, drive cars, and we're part of society. And so we are still here. And I think that's the biggest message and misconception that people have, or they think, oh, we're all on quote unquote reservations out west, and we're all living in huts with no running water and dirt floors. There is a lot of sad poverty in Indian country. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying those aren't important stories to cover. But I take it personal, a personal mission in trying to dispel and what I call myth bust. And my kids and I love to pound our fist into our hand and say, bust the myth. There is nothing more harmful to a Native American child growing up today than to be forgotten, overlooked, or ignored.
Dana, what are some of the issues that you think are the most like prescient that the Native community is really facing right now in DC?
Sadly, we have the highest alcoholism rate, the highest high school dropout, unbelievably infant mortality, high cancer rates, high diabetes. The list could go on and on. Mary's nodding her head. Missing, murdered Indigenous women. There's lots of important issues. Kids going hungry at night. Water issues. Housing. I'm not working on a story right now about loss of Indigenous languages. Sadly, we lost so many elders during COVID. Indigenous languages are typically oral traditions. We don't have the depth that quote unquote white society does of writing down our languages. So sadly, as Indigenous elders have gotten older and die off, those languages aren't getting passed on as frequently. We have got more issues to feel my fingers and my toes that many folks are working really hard at. So when people try to narrow us down to like, oh, you must be really worried about the mascot issue. Again, I'm not saying that's not important, but we got nine other fingers and nine other big issues that we're juggling. And there's people like Mary working in all kinds of areas to deal with these. They all do sort of overlap in a way. A lot of people could say these are problems and bad statistics. I like to sort of flip them on their head. And those are always going to be there. They're going to take a long time and decades and centuries of bad U.S. policy that have gotten us to those situations. But I like to really show people, hey, even in spite of all this, look at how we have persevered.
If you meet a Native American, and that sounds so strange, but you know, if you are in the Native community and you look around and you do realize, you know, we are all survivors to a certain degree because our great grandparents and grandparents and parents persevered and overcame economic, you know, turmoil that would take apart families, that would, you know, and with the U.S. policies trying to take apart our families, even as late as the 70s and early 80s, that we are survivors through their ability to overcome.
I want to zoom out a little bit, you know, talking about this idea of busting the myth that Native folks don't exist anymore. Thinking about the D.C. area, what are some of the main Indigenous communities that have lived in the D.C. area?
I've done a couple stories now on the Anacostians, who once lived here more than 400 years ago, right here in D.C. And I love talking about them and doing stories about them. The name Anacostian is not their original names. They were actually called the Nantichanks, but the translation to Anacostians actually means a town of traders. And they were best known for trading fur with the Iroquois. They're here in the 1600s. They had 300 members. They were mainly along the Anacostia River. And some of the very sites that we all pass by today were where they lived. There was a village on what's now Capitol Hill. As you guys know, D.C. is built on a swamp. Parts of the swamp made for good growing squash, corn, beans, where the Supreme Court now sits and Library of Congress. Those were fields for growing. There were ducks and geese that flew over what's now the National Mall, perfect for hunting. They got quarried rocks out of the Piney Branch Trail and right along Van Ness, where there's now coffee shops and pizza parlors. So there are no longer any Anacostians around. They merged with the Piscataway and Pamunkeys and Rappahannocks and other tribes, larger tribes around here, sadly, due to warfare and illness. But that doesn't mean they disappeared. There's so much history right here in D.C. at the presence of Indigenous people. There's shells from burial mounds that have been found at Boling Air Force Base. At Roosevelt Island, I just took my kids hiking there the other week, and I make them pause, kneel for a minute, feel the presence. Indigenous people were here. That was once called Anacostian Island. It was not named after a white president of Roosevelt Island. That's Indigenous land. This is Indigenous land where we are in D.C. You can tell I feel very passionate about this because when people say, oh, the Indians weren't here in D.C. and nothing could be further from the truth. Piscataway, Pamunkey, these are names that were here. They were here first and they should be recognized for that. May you never forget, being a Washingtonian, that this land, this was the first contact. John Smith came east. He came here before he got to the West. People think all Indians were just popped up in the West. Okay. The Trail of Tears started on the East Coast, my friends. This area is so rich with history and people just forget it or overlook it or they don't care. So I'm thrilled that you're asking about it.
It's time to get dressed up, DC. So Others Might Eat is having its Young Professionals Network Spring Soiree. That's to help raise funds for homelessness in DC. The gala is on the evening of May 17th at the National Museum of Women in the Arts. There will be live music from DJ Heat from the Washington Wizards, photo booths, food, and even a special appearance by a former actor from Pretty Little Liars. Wow! There will also be a canned food drive, so be sure to bring a few cans to support Some's Food Pantry. Grab tickets before they're gone at some.org/springsoiree. That's some.org/springsoiree. See you there.
So we've talked about a few already, but are there any more key sites in D.C. that are central to local Indigenous history?
The Potomac River was a great trading place where multiple nations, but also the African slave trade and the escaped people who would come. And this is both Native and African Americans who escaped, and they would come and find a safe place further out. But I think it's around the Virginia, Northern Virginia area, just in that location, had a lot of safe havens for Native people. And it just became this just source for goodness back then. And so I think that's kind of missed. And I know there's some historians there who are working on trying to raise that history as well, and explains a lot of the trails and so forth that I think are prominent in the maps that you see.
These names are here for a reason. As Mary says, they didn't just pop up. They have a ton of history. There's an entire community in College Park where my aunt lives called Hollywood, and every single street is named after an Indian tribe. That neighborhood didn't pop up just for the fun of it. It came because people like my aunt and uncle came up from North Carolina. There were no jobs in our reservation area. And they started, a housing developer started building in there, and he found the Native Americans were buying his houses and started renaming the streets after different tribes. But there's a ton of history just all around D.C.
You know, you could walk around D.C. and look at all the names of anything and trace it back to an original, you know, location for indigenous purpose. But with some of the more contemporary names of, and which is a great example, is Indian Head Highway. It definitely is a current issue that's being fought, and it actually did get changed. The name was approved by the Maryland governor to change that name of that highway. But when they went to go celebrate this and actually have that take place, they had gotten word from the office, the governor's office, that, you know, they were not going to actually physically change the name. It was in spirit, so to speak, that they had changed the name.
I did a whole a story on this and how that name change came about, and exactly what Mary said. It didn't quite get changed, unfortunately, all the way. But I think there's a, as she puts it so nicely, there's a heavy spirit and push to continue that. But pause for a moment and think about how that highway got named. The lead of my story was a common friend Mary and I have, a super smart Native American scholar and historian. She's Piscataway, Gabrielle Tayac. She tells of being a young girl and driving down that highway with her dad. This is an oral history that was passed down in her family for over 100 years. Her father said, I'm quoting from my story, quote, "They killed our people and put their heads on spikes. My father said, that's why Indian Head was called this." Pause for a second and think about being a young person and driving down a 20-mile stretch of highway, a major highway that leads to a military base down there, a well-traveled highway. And that's how it got its name. That's chilling. Chilling. We're supposed to be modern and educated. My personal opinion is that's not an educated name. It's an entirely offensive name. The Piscataway Indian Nation is 4,500 people. And guess what? They have to drive down that highway every single day to work.
Do you know of any way, like if someone listening wants to drive around, walk around DC and learn more about the ways that Native American history or culture has played out there, are there ways that folks can do that?
There is an app out there called Indigenous DC. It was created by a scholar at the time at the Washington University, or George Washington University. And she and I think maybe a couple of other people created this app that points out exactly where specific major national events for Native American, whether Native Americans who came here to fight Congress or to change something in policy or, where things were declared. And again, it's a lot of history that went down in DC, that made ripple effects through Indian country. And that app really goes through each one of those places and spaces. And then another app, and help me with this, Dana, I haven't downloaded it yet, but it's shows you anywhere in the country, but they also have DC in there, what land you're on.
That app is called Native Land. You can plug in a location and see whose land you're standing on. The thing about these apps, though, they're great. They're awesome. But I would also challenge folks to go to Native scholars, Native historians, And I strive to first and foremost quote people who are Indigenous. We are still here. There's many people like Mary Phillips, Gabrielle Tayac, Chief Francis Gray of the Piscataway. There's many folks here who their ancestors have lived these stories. They need to be the voices telling these stories.
Dana, Mary, thank you so much for being here today. And thank you for all the work that you're doing to help illuminate these issues in DC.
It was a real pleasure. Thank you.
Well, it was a pleasure to meet everybody.
And before you go, here's audio producer Julia Karen with the news.
Recently, there was an audit of DC's Department of General Services, and whoo boy, the results are not good. It found shortcomings in the agency, including issues with cost data, completion dates, preventive maintenance, and supporting documents to justify repair expenses. This comes on the heels of a new bill that would require the agency to get approval from a school principal, foreman, or other school employee before a work order ticket can be closed. Meanwhile, more than 100 after-school groups in D.C. are getting money from the city to keep running or even maybe expand. The district granted a combined $16 million for the programs, which teach a range of activities, including musical training, storytelling, and script writing. It's pretty cool. 15,000 students will benefit from the investment. And lastly, a new mental health clinic has opened in Loudoun County for patients who are uninsured. The clinic aims to help thousands of residents who are unable to get care from Virginia's mental health system and trim down wait times for therapists. Services will focus on short-term therapy, and there are plans to expand to group therapy as well.
That's all for today here on CityCast DC. And if you liked the show, tell somebody while you're on your way to the Native American History Museum. We'll be back tomorrow with even more news from around the city. Talk to you then.